I'm Gabby's Jules. Gray skies over West London, but blue skies over North London, where Arsenal are top of the table. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about that incredibly boring Liverpool United game. We'll be talking about Bayern bouncing back, Leverkusen still going, Real Madrid winning big. But Jules, this taping of the show happens to coincide with the Champions League draw.
I love it.
So, hot off the press.
Yes.
I'm just going to read the names, and then we can talk about what we want to talk about, right?
Yeah.
It's Porto against Arsenal. It's Napoli against Barcelona. Paris Saint-Germain against Real Sociedad. Inter against Atletico Madrid. PSV Eindhoven against Borussia Dortmund. Lazio against Bayern München. Copenhagen against Manchester City. Ugh. Leipzig against Real Madrid. What stands out?
I think the Napoli-Barcelona tie gap, of course, it's of the pot where the teams finished second. So you had the PSG, Napoli and Inter. Really, they were the three biggest club there. It was pretty obvious that at some point one of them will face at least one, a top club. And it happened to be...
And instead they got Barcelona.
No, but Napoli against Barcelona, which I think is a very even, by the way, tie. I'm not saying that Barca are massively favourite. Yeah. I'm just saying that the rest of Inter play Atletico Madrid, that's big, but maybe not as big as Napoli, Barca, who are the last two winners of Serie A. And
I think if you're Inter, you're not displeaced with this draw.
No,
at some point, you've got to face a good team.
It's also the Diego Simeone's derby, so, you know.
Well, Diego Simeone coming home. Paris Saint-Germain against Real Sociedad. Are they dancing in the streets around the Parc des Princes?
So, L'Equipe this morning...
Are they thanking Uncle Nasser?
Said the best draw would be Real Sociedad. I don't
think so. Because they haven't watched the group stages. They don't know how good Real Sociedad have been.
I just don't think it's a good draw at all. The way that La Real press, the way they play, the intensity they have, it's just not... I don't think it's very good for PSG because of the way we play. So, I'm not happy with the draw. I would have much rather Atletico Madrid even, or even Barcelona, to be fair, than La Real Sociedad. So, it's not pleasing for me.
All right, let's talk to holders. Manchester City, they get Copenhagen on paper. I think the easiest, weakest team, maybe along with Lazio.
They're the easiest one.
But I'll tell you what, Copenhagen, the adventure continues, yeah?
It's great. It's like a cup, you know, the Minos against the best team in the world. It would be fantastic, a park and the atmosphere. You know what, United went there. And it didn't work out for them.
Yeah, so City aren't United. Lazio against Bayern also feels a little bit one-sided to me, because I thought Lazio were really not good in the group stage. I think Maricio Sarri's got a ton of things to figure out.
Do you think Miroslav Klose is going to appear at some point and just like...
awesome. I'm not sure that Sarri will be in charge by the time they face Bayern, to be honest. Porto against Arsenal.
Interesting
again.
One. Because the Porto, the 4-4-2, Sergio Conceição, again, the intensity, Galeno, Meditaremi, they've got a lot of good players. Arsenal have to be favourite, especially with the second leg at home, and it's not a bad draw for Arsenal. But it's just not a straightforward game either. It never is, I think, against Porto.
I think both these teams embroiled in a pretty tight title race in their respective leagues. We'll see where they are when they play each other in February. Leipzig against Real Madrid. Some might say one evil empire against another. I would never say that, of course, because Carletto Ancelotti, with his injuries, Leipzig, I don't think, are a good match. We have to see, can they bring somebody in January to help out a defense after the Alaba injury?
But Real Madrid have to be favored. And if you think, if you're Leipzig and you got City already in your group, which you knew that you were going to finish second, then to draw Real Madrid in the next round is just... one of those years, you know.
It's almost like it's as if God is punishing you,
given
who you are, right? And what you stand for. I'm sorry. I see the world in biblical terms, and I think these things have consequences.
What about the Peter Bosch derby when PSV meets his former club where things really didn't go well for him at all at Dortmund?
We're going to get into this more, but...
You love your Peter Bosch now. You've changed.
When facts change, opinions change. I've made fun of Peter Bosch for so long, but they're having an incredible season. And Dortmund, I don't know what I'm going to get. Even within they won their Champions League group. They won the toughest Champions League group. But they were so up and down. They were terrible one game, good the other game, unlucky in the other game.
I mean, obviously, a lot of things can change between now and when those games are played in February and early March, right? Santi Jimenez might not be at PSV. Jadon Sancho might be back at Dortmund. And the same for a lot of those clubs who might have new signings, players leaving, all that kind of stuff. Managers, as you said, with Sarri not being there too. So now is the draw as we see now in the current form of those clubs now. But in 2 months' time, it might be different.
Yeah, and you know, when I think about this, I see four evenly matched games: Napoli, Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain, Real Sociedad, Inter, Atleti, and actually PSV Eindhoven, Dortmund. I think those are all very, very close to the other on paper.
Yeah,
more one-sided. But I'll tell you what, and you know, if you've been listening to us, this is why we don't spend that much time on these draws, because as you just said, everything can change.
Exactly.
There's another 2 months to go until the rubber actually hits the road. But I'll tell you what, I'm psyched.
I'm already excited.
I like the Champions
League.
This is going to be fun. It's going to be a good one, and we'll see who can knock Manchester City off their perch. All right, Jules, people love predictions, so they can go back and tell us how dumb we are.
Tell me why don't you like to talk to the draw was today?
Right.
People are getting excited. People are going to book their flights, their tickets, their hotels. They're going to get excited. They're going to start watching. If you're an Arsenal fan, you're going to start watching Porto.
Every week.
If you're, maybe not every week, but they're going to start getting interest in that other team they're going to play in, we say, mid-February, end February, beginning of March, okay? And yeah, you're like, what's that?
Don't say Scrooge. The Grinch.
Scrooge, not the Grinch, the Scrooge, where you're like robbing people's joy from the draw of getting excited to play Arsenal, Napoli.
I am not. It's fine to be excited. I am excited to watch Napoli against Barcelona. I'm actually a little bit excited to watch Leipzig against Real Madrid. I'm not particularly excited to watch Porto against Arsenal. But I'll tell you what, I will get excited.
Because it's too far away from you. That's
exactly.
You
it's too far away.
Okay,
it's
I know
too far
that,
away.
But we could,
I don't blame them for having the draw now, but there's so much that can happen, right? I know it's part of our job to go and predict this. And look, well, let's play the prediction. Let's play the percentage game. Right?
Okay.
And look, I think it would have been different, to be honest. We would have had more compelling storylines if there had been more upsets in the group stage. But every group winner, except for Paris Saint-Germain, you know, everybody who's won who's supposed to win the group ultimately won the group, except for Paris Saint-Germain and Inter, right? I think everybody else.
Yeah, Inter and PSG are the two ones that you expect to finish.
Exactly. So we didn't have this like, oh,
no,
nobody wants to face so and so.
True.
But let's go through. Oh, and then Paris Saint-Germain got lucky, of course, or luckier.
I don't think it's a lucky draw at all. I'm not happy. I know the headlines already. I know what people are saying in France. Okay. I'm dreading this Real Sociedad team.
The point is they're playing the team that are number six in La Liga right now. So people are looking at this and saying,
who also topped their group with the last season's finalists?
Porto against Arsenal. Let's do percentages here. I'll start. I think this is 80% Arsenal.
I'll go 70-30 because I just think...
Oh, wait, David Raya might be playing. Yeah, no, I'll join you. 70-30.
Simply because I just don't think it's easy to move this big block. They're dangerous on the break going forward. I really believe that Galeno is a wonderful player and they're strong and they're solid and they're okay. David Carmo and Pep is maybe not the most mobile or
defensive partnerships.
But I think they still have something. And let's not forget, it's a Sergio Conceição team with the intensity that comes with that medium block. They're going to make life difficult for you. And yeah, we've seen in the past that when they come to Liverpool especially, they get absolutely spanked.
Good thing you're not playing Liverpool, though. You got me a little bit on this because I'm thinking set pieces, and you have Pep and the 100%. Other center back, and Taremi, and they all come up. David Raya
and
comes out
Evan
to
Nilsson.
Clean it. And
Evan Nilsson. Yeah, no, it's not. I think Arsenal have to be favorite, and you're right. 70-30.
That's
60-40.
Right,
remember
when Arteta said that, you know, he's going to pick goalkeepers based on the situation the same way he picks midfielders based on the situation? I wonder. Well, I don't know if he was just pretending when he said that.
We see.
But this might be a Ramsdale game.
We see.
Just based on that.
Yeah.
Napoli against Barca. You can go first.
50-50 for me. There's no doubt. I'm not really sure what Mazzarri is going to do now in the next few weeks until this game is played. We know that there's probably won't be any signing on either side. So same squad. Xavi under pressure. Far more than Mazzarri, who's on a like... Well, if he doesn't do well, he's not going to be there next season anyway. We know that. So I think the pressure is probably more on Xavi and Barcelona, but they've got the second leg at Montjuic. I'm not actually sure that's an advantage.
That's not an advantage.
So for me, 50-50.
All right, I'm going to go 55 Barcelona, 45 Napoli, because I think it's going to be
5-4. Compared to my 50-50.
I'm taking points off for Mazzarri.
Give the guy a chance.
Although I've seen him before. Although to be fair, his European record was pretty good, and he can make life tough for you.
But Australia also, against Jules Koundé, I'm sorry, but every day I'm like, oh.
I think Barcelona are going to be better come February. Paris Saint-Germain against Real Sociedad. I'm going to go first. I'm going to go 60-40 to Paris Saint-Germain. And if you say 50-50 just because it's, you know...
No. I might go like you. I still think PSG are favourite, of course. But... And Luis Enrique said something really interesting after the Dortmund game the other day when he said, I know it will be better in February. And I think by that it means that they didn't really have much time to prepare now because they have played every 3 days like all the big clubs. So for all the things that maybe you want to transmit to that squad, it just needs a bit maybe more time on the training pitch. And by then they would have it because when the league restarts beginning of January, or when the season restarts beginning of January after the winter break in France, they will have only one game a week until this last 16 first leg. So he will have more time there. You would expect that someone like Zaire Emery gets better. I think they would try to sign someone in January too. I expect PSG to be better. But I think La Real is a really, really good team.
That's a really good point. And it is, some managers giving them time to, I always bang on about giving managers time to work. Some of them don't need time to work. Others do need time to work if you want to get the full value add. And Luis Enrique is, so I think that is a good point. Inter against Atletico de Madrid. I like this matchup, but I'll let you go first, actually.
I think this is a really good one. Really, really good one for many reasons. The first one is you don't really know still what Atletico side you're going to see. The one at Bilbao, the one at Valencia, who got battered twice, even the one against Barcelona, or the one against Real Madrid, the one that we've seen playing so well with Griezmann, Morata on fire, with a more proactive style of football, all that kind of stuff. I'm not sure. What I know, though, is I know exactly what kind of Inter team I'm going to see, because this time there will be no rotation from Inzaghi. It's not going to make... This was for the group stage, to change 8 players from the league to the Champions League, 6 players there, benching Lautaro, benching Thuram. That's not going to happen there. So it will be Inter with their strongest 11 at their best, and we've seen in Serie A this season when they are their best, when they have their strongest team, how good they are. So I think Inter have to be favourite for me, even with the second leg in Spain. I go 55-45 Inter.
Okay, I'll go even further now. I'll go 60-40 Inter because I'm drinking the Inzaghi Kool-Aid. I think actually his rotations and his substitutions, it's so designed to make Inter better, to give him a better chance. And I want to see Davide Frattesi in this game. Maybe not to start, but I want to see him go and help decide the tie. I'd also like to see Inter pick up another striker in January. This Alexis Arnautovic thing, not for me.
Yeah.
PSV Eindhoven against Borussia Dortmund, the Peter Bosz derby.
Ooh.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to go all in. I'm going to say 45-55 because they have such a big lead in Holland. And they'll have probably an even bigger lead by that point that they can just zero in on this, whereas Dortmund are going to freak out about getting back into the top four.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're 5 points from a top four spot right now. I'm not sold on this. I don't think Terzic
might not be there, by the way.
He might not be there. Did I say 45-55?
Yeah.
I might go 48 PSV Eindhoven, 52 Dortmund.
I go 50-50. I think this is going to be great because those both teams that are, I mean, certainly PSV in the way they want to play, very open and very attacking and all of that. I think Dortmund are like that by default more than their own willingness because I think they're a bit all over the place at time and it's a bit chaotic what they do. But it could easily finish 2-2 and 3-3 over the two legs. You know, I think it could be two games like that because they're going to both attack a lot. So yeah, 50. I think 50-50 is fair, and it just would be down to something really, really minimal.
Lazio and Bayern, Jules.
Yeah.
There's a parallel universe where Sarri ball landed in Rome, and Luis Alberto is ripping everything up,
and Ciro Immobile is scoring loads of goals in the Champions League.
Yeah, this isn't it.
I don't think it's in it. No, and I don't know again what Bayern are we going to be? Are we going to see a Bayern team dominant and with a lot of the ball, or just hitting them on the counter and leaving Sarri ball to have the ball? Maybe that would happen at the Olympico. I go 80-20. I think Bayern are just going to be too strong for Lazio anyway.
Yeah, the individual matchups, I think, are bad. Yeah. I mean, Alessio Romagnoli back there against the speed of Sané and Coleman. 80-20 is about right. But I will say this. I don't think Lazio can beat Bayern, but Thomas Tuchel can beat Bayern if he has a...
Didn't we think about that last season already or the season before when they played each other?
I think this all the time when it comes to Thomas Tuchel. Copenhagen against Manchester City. Oh. You're making a sad face.
I love this story for them. Because in a way, I wanted Copenhagen to play Real Sociedad because I wanted one of the two surprises, really. And I wanted one of them to still be there in the quarters because I love the story.
Hopefully,
right?
Real Sociedad will still be there.
And good for them if they are. But in a way, remember, I don't know if you saw the video, I don't know if I sent it to you, but in the French Cup draw was made last week. And this team for the sixth division drew PSG. And they had a camera with them. They were watching in the like clubhouse, you know, the club. And they exploded. They were so happy to draw PSG when they know they're going to get knocked out and they're going to lose like 7-0 or something.
Or
right?
Beat PSG and become immortal.
They won't. I'll tell you that now. They won't. But it was all because they wanted to play against Mbappe and against, right, you know, all those guys and against the best team in France. So for Copenhagen...
You think the Højlund twins are like, ooh, I get to play against Manuel Akanji.
No, but for Højlund, for Copenhagen, for the fans, for all of that.
There is a lot of the day out.
That, you know what I mean? There might be that. And yeah, they got it because it's very unlikely that they can beat City over two legs, and they know that already. So it's like 90-10 for me, for City, obviously. But maybe they're just happy. They're happy because they're going to play against Haaland, and they're going to play against De Bruyne, and they're going to play against Pep, and it's going to be an amazing atmosphere. And they might never play against the best team in the world ever again, so...
10%?
10, yeah. 90-10 for me.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right.
Is it too low for them, though? Because they are a good, decent team.
Yeah, maybe Edison goes walkabout. Maybe we don't get to see the Haaland against two Højlunds. I don't know. But, yeah, no, I think 10%. Pep has a record for a reason, yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
Leipzig-Real Madrid.
This is good because Real Madrid are favorites. So 70-30, I think... You can go slightly higher, slightly lower. You go higher than 70-30?
Yeah.
Let's not forget that this Leipzig team was 2-0 up at City. And yeah, okay, at halftime. And then, okay, the second half, they crumbled. Okay, I'm just saying.
It's a different team, different style.
They won one at home against City until the 85th minute or something like that. And then Doku and Alvarez off the bench make a difference and they lose 3-1. I'm just saying that Openda is a wonderful striker and forward that right now, the partnership at the back.
Xavi Simons yet.
Rudiger and Nacho, by the way, for Real Madrid, right, for this game. Coming.
There'll be another dude coming in, yeah. You are convincing me.
And Xavi is good. And it's a Marco Rosa team that comes with good things and bad things. But I'm just saying, 70-30 I think is fair. Maybe even 65-35, if you want.
Yes, all right, you've won me over. I don't think this is this straightforward for Real Madrid. I just think there's going to be more questions. Who knows what condition Vinicius is going to be in come February. So, much, much closer than that. All right, those are our predictions. Feel free. We gave you percentages. So that it's kind of a hedge of saying, so like, then you can go and clip them and laugh at us. But I think the basic point is 2 months is a really, really long time in football. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Champions League draw. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
It wasn't much of a game, so let's get it out of the way first. Manchester United hold Liverpool to a 0-0 draw at Anfield. I assume Ten Hag is happier here?
Yeah, I think so, Gab. Certainly, I think Liverpool had 34 shots, only 8 on target. The XG is actually decent, to be fair. They had chances, just couldn't take them between Varane and Onana. Yeah,
well, you have 34 shots at the XG. Like, you know, it's going to be at least 0.34. So,
you know, but it's still decent. You know, it's still a decent, like, they should have scored. They could have scored. They should have scored maybe one. You knew United were going to come and play defensively. It was the same defensive structure that they had against Bayern Munich in the Champions League when they had to win and they played not to lose. They played not to lose again against Liverpool away from home. I don't like it. I can understand it, though. And certainly I was not surprised by what United offered. And to be fair to them, they had the best chance in the game with Højlund, who should have scored, really, when he when he hit the ball at Alisson.
I'm bored with United. Let's talk Liverpool, though. So help me with this, Jules. Help me understand. I blame when McAllister's not there that they look worse, but equally, I don't think they've played well. They're top of the table.
They haven't.
I don't think they're anywhere near their potential.
Yeah.
Every time I see Darwin Nunez, I'm kind of like, eh. And I think Klopp agrees with me because he's pointed out many, many times over the last couple of weeks. And yet, you know, they were top of the table. They're 1 point off the top.
Yeah.
Is there a broader message here that, like, when they start playing well, they'll run away with it? Or is it everybody's not good?
No, I think that Arsenal also have room for improvement. I think City have room for improvement. I think only Villa really are already kind of at their best. I don't think they can play much, much better than what they do, where the other big three. But it's the same for, you know, well, Manchester United for sure, even Tottenham, all that kind of stuff. So the only thing I would say is I'm all for Trent to play in midfield at times. I think he's a very gifted, genius player. But when you replace him by Joe Gomez, and it happens that towards the end of the game, there's some move on the right-hand side, because you don't have Trent there because you moved into midfield, you end up with Joe Gomez having a good opportunity there, as we saw when Salah played him through. And instead of maybe giving the ball back to Salah in a 1-2, he shot Nating. So everything that you gain by putting Trent in midfield, you almost lose out by having Joe Gomez at right back going forward.
Makes sense.
So they need to find the right balance. And Real Madrid beat Villarreal 4-1 on Sunday night as Jude Bellingham scores again. Luka Modric turns on the style, and your boy Brahim Diaz scores a lovely, lovely goal, Gabby. They're back at top spot, at least for now.
I love Brahim Diaz. The symmetry. Brahim Diaz and Rodrigo. I think they have weapons. I feel like Vinicius, who? No, I'm kidding. They'll be better when he's back. But
they played well without him.
But still, it's nice to see that coming together. They're right up there. Girona are playing in a few hours. For now, Real Madrid are top of the table. And all they can do is just keep going.
Mm.
On the flip side, Jules, our thoughts go to David Alaba, who suffered an ACL injury. His season is over. And Carletto pretty much said they have to hit the January transfer market.
Yeah, there's still no Eder Militao, of course. So you're left with Rudiger, Nacho. Ferland Mendy also got injured, got a groin injury. You can play Tchouaméni there. He played one game earlier in the season because there was already no more centre-backs left. So, yeah, I think it's probably wise to go and try to get someone
injured. There's no left-back either because Camavinga's injured
Frank
as well.
Franck Garcia plays.
No, I know. But
he's a good player.
But whatever, Camavinga's still missing, right?
Yeah, so he's going to come back, though. It's not as bad as an injury like
this. I do think when Real Madrid look at the season and take stock, right, you've got arguably the best keeper in the world out for the season.
Yeah.
You've got Real Madrid's best defender out for the season. Now you have Real Madrid's second best defender out for the season.
Yeah.
You have Real Madrid's best attacking player out for, not the season, but out for two very long stretches.
Yeah.
You've got Camavinga, who had made the left back position his own. And you're going to tell me about Ferland Mendy again.
But, Ferland Mendy, maybe.
You're okay, fine. But, I mean, it is kind of a smoke and mirror situation.
Yeah. Arsenal, meanwhile, are top of the league in England, Gab. They beat Brighton 2-0. Do they look like champions to you?
So this was maybe one of the first. I'm sure Arsenal have played better on other occasions, but I thought this was a really good performance from what I think was the team that he had in mind at the start of the season, which should be Arsenal's strongest 11. Some might have Tomoyasu, if available, ahead of Ben White. Some might have Timber ahead of Zinchenko, but whatever, they're not there. I thought this was really impressive, and I don't think the balance is there yet with Havertz. It's not perfect, but it's improving. You will take something away from Udegaard if you play Havertz there. But what I saw in this game against a footballing side like Brighton, who were not good, but they were not good because Arsenal were good, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, although Brighton haven't been great this season, and also on Thursday night.
Wait, Brighton haven't been great this season. What do you want them to be? Top four? They're in the top eight.
They're ninth, Gab. They haven't been good this season.
For Brighton and their budget, but they play football in a certain way.
And I thought
Arsenal out-footballed them.
Yeah, and Brighton had scored, I think, in the last 32 league games, scoring, their XG was two in every game in those 32.
And it was felt like zero. I think they had one shot on target.
Nothing in the first half for a long time.
Manchester City go 2-0 up at home to Crystal Palace. Everything's going great. And then they concede twice, including an injury time penalty. Jules, one win in their last six league matches for Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, I mean, I think they played well, to be fair, without Haaland again. They played well for most of that game. But again, late in the game, either fitness-wise, they're just not at the best yet. They don't pick. They take their eyes off the ball. Something happens because it's late goals against Palace to cost you 2 points. Let go at Chelsea, that cost you 2 points. Let go where Arsenal, that cost you a point. Let go against Liverpool at home, that cost you 2 points again. So there's clearly something. There's something wrong. Why do they keep conceding late, so late like that?
So there's nothing wrong overall, like you said. They played well. I think Palace's XG before that Mateta counterattack was 0.03. They had two shots on goal. I think it's simple as obviously finishing on one end, and obviously Haaland's not there, and you know, there's variance and stuff for that. I'm not concerned about that. I think it's the nature of the Pep system that creates situations for individual defending. And if you lose individual battles, then you're going to concede. And it does put strain on these defenders, and maybe some of them aren't as good as they want. I mean, Ruben Dias.
But if you control again for 75 minutes, you could control it for another 15.
Well, no, but you can give up a counterattack at any time.
Yeah,
right?
No, true.
So as long as you got the guys who are monstering the strikers, you're fine. And Phil Foden, that was a brain fart. Yeah, you know, move on.
That was completely. Inter win away at Lazio 2-0 on Sunday night to stay very much in first place in Serie A, Gab. Will you join me in celebrating the Tula?
No, I'd rather celebrate the Inzaghi. Because, come on. Yes, Lautaro. But, you know, took advantage
Lautaro
of a mistake.
15 goals already in the league.
Yeah,
the
when Marisic passes the ball into his path, I think that doesn't help. Turam's been fantastic. Overall, I think it's a team thing. Jan Bisek is now part of the regular rotation at the back. So Inzaghi trusting his kids as well. Very impressive. As for Lazio, real smart, leaving out Luis Alberto. There's reports of things behind the scenes and whatever else, but you're at home. You know you need to win. Play your best player.
They didn't play badly, though. They didn't play badly.
They created, but this Inter team can outlast you. They can beat you so many different ways. Let's talk Bundesliga table toppers. Xabi Alonso and Bayer Leverkusen do it again. 3-0 against Eintracht Frankfurt, and it could have been more. Yeah. 44 games, 41 wins, 3 draws. Jules, when are they coming back to Earth? Are they ever coming back to Earth?
I don't know, Gabi. I think they've scored 78 goals already or something crazy this season in 25 games. It's unreal. It's absolutely unreal. It's such a pleasure to watch them, the way they play, Wirtz, Boniface, the two wing-backs. Frimpong scored again yesterday. It's just amazing. And I think the Bundesliga is inviting for a team like Leverkusen. I think there are a lot of games where it's a bit chaotic often. And we saw against Bayern, for example, that was maybe the toughest game where they drew and they had chances, but they also at times find it a bit more difficult. And because they don't play in the Champions League this season, only in the Europa League, they haven't had, they're always fresh. No, we were fresh, and because they almost have to. But you see, I want to see more opposition to them, like, that would be maybe more aggressive, maybe a bit deeper, maybe a bit with not much space for Wirtz, not much space for Boniface. Every time I watch them, Boniface has so much space. I'm like, wow, okay. So this is the only thing I would say. However, in the league, they are so, so good.
I like to think it's Xabi Alonso who creates that space for them. Of course.
Xabi went into the Valencia game with Barcelona saying that Barca needed 3 points badly, and he finished 1-1. That's 3 in a row now without a win.
Yeah, you don't want to write a check that your backside can't cash. That said, I know if there's people who want Xavi gone, they'll use this as an excuse. I wouldn't, because, yes, you got beaten by Girona's side that were fantastic. You lost to Antwerp with the B team, but they played really well, I thought, against Valencia. They just couldn't finish. They had a bunch of chances. Pedri looked better in playing in that deeper position. And I thought they were really let down on the Guillemot goal. How do you let a ball bounce twice?
He can't bounce. We said at kids' level, you tell them never to let the ball bounce.
Yeah, and I think this one's on Araujo because he's got the vision of it. You should have done it. Araujo is, you know, the guy who generally doesn't let you down. Normally, it's Koundé who lets you down at the back.
He hasn't been as good this season.
I think it's even crazy to talk about changing Xavi, but the reality is, if Atleti win their game in hand, you know, they're down to fourth. That's as simple as. More league leaders, Jules, though Paris Saint-Germain looked kind of tame to me away to Lille.
Yeah, one of those games where, I mean, to be fair, they controlled the first half really well. They took the lead on the penalty. They were not creating too much, but they would have been very happy with a 1-0 win on a
Mbappe. How stupid penalty. Was the guy who gave away the penalty?
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah, so the penalty, I thought you were going to say about the Asensio pass. Yeah, the penalty is really stupid. Diakite on Lucas. And then when PSG just were about to see out the game, Marco Asensio just came on, tried this ridiculous pass in his own 30 yards. He recovered the ball in the corner flag and tried that pass that got intercepted. Jonathan David scored, make it 1-1. It's not big deal. PSG are winter champions. They're still 5 points clear with a much better goal difference. But it's one of those things. Asensio is a good player. You watch that and you say, like, why did you do this? What went through your head to make such a stupid decision at that time? It was just absolutely crazy, though.
Jonathan David turning the corner, coming off the bench again?
Yeah, it looks a little bit like that.
It's celebration. You look pretty motivated.
Yeah, but still not his best. Cole Palmer is ever more the key man for Chelsea, who beat Sheffield United 2-0 at Stamford Bridge to move into the top half of the table on Saturday. You were there. Were you impressed?
No, I wasn't. I mean, Cole Palmer's very good. Yeah, I thought Raheem Sterling also looked good. Like, they could have scored more. Sheffield United aren't a good side. There's a reason they're near the bottom, but they were buzzing of the fact that they changed the manager. They won that there for the first game. So it was always going to take them time to break it down. But when they break it down, it comes down to an individual situation. Credit to Pochettino for switching Palmer, who was playing centrally, over to wider area. He found more space. But man, Pochettino's right. There is so much work to do here, but at least they're in the top half of the table, right?
Yeah, that's better.
Aston Villa are a point off the top of the table after their 2-1 victory away to Brentford. Jules, I can't tell who's angry here. Ollie Watkins, who scored the winner and pointed at some dude in the crowd, or Thomas Frank, who didn't like Ben Mee's red card and penalties that weren't given. He looked especially jumped up in this game.
Yeah, I think it has to be Thomas Frank, right? And especially to lose the game like that in the 85th minute. The penalties, the red card, the way even the game went.
I'm assuming Thomas Frank he seems like a reasonable person.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he hasn't seen the replay.
It was on the heat of the moment, you would think, right? After the game, to be so angry.
Yeah, but then,
he had a lot of things to say.
He had a ton of things to say.
Yeah.
Ollie Watkins, apparently, who of course used to play for Brentford,
yes,
he took issue with a guy behind the goal who was abusing him throughout the game. So I'm assuming this is somebody he knows. He says he was directing personal abuse at him.
I don't know, because we saw Bellingham doing it the other day when he scored against Betis, I think.
Can't criticize Bellingham.
He blew a kiss
to
someone who was like...
Well, that's fine, but it's a bit different. But then, the staring him down, again, I don't like doing it. It wasn't racist abuse. It wasn't anything like that. Just leave the crowd be.
Emi Martinez and Neil Mopé, Gab, did they bring a smile to your face to finish your weekend?
You know what? I if you want to laugh at them and then you get really depressed that these people behave like this.
They're grown-ups. You know what I mean? They are grown-up people.
You know my thoughts on Emi Martinez, right? A guy who pretends the World Cup is a dildo. He's going to have these situations. I think fundamentally, these people are stupid for acting like that. Because you know what? The next time some big striker goes and hip checks Emi Martinez and he rolls around on the ground, hey, look, maybe the referee's not going to buy it. Because now you've developed this ridiculous rep, right? Neil Mopé, another one. He's as bad as... Who's the French striker who played for Watford years ago and I think probably also played for these types of crappy teams that Mopé plays for? You know what I'm talking about. The guy who used to always dive, right?
Anthony Knockat.
Yes, yes. There you go. What are they related? What? No, like, are they like brothers from different...
No, but Neil Mopé, he's half Argentine, right? His mum is Argentine, his dad is French.
He's
Emi Martinez.
Like, honestly, like, I don't think football... I don't want to get all moralistic about it because obviously people will try to get an advantage or whatever. But it's so stupid. It's embarrassing.
They just look like the school playground.
They look like morons.
How old are
honestly,
they?
Both
it's
of
just,
them.
It's just like terrible.
Bayern München bounced back nicely by beating up Stuttgart 3-0 as Harry Kane bags another two goals. Alles gut, ja, Jules?
So, let's start with Kane. Gab, of course, two more goals, 20 and 14, incredible. They've never seen anything like that. Not even Gerd Müller, Lewandowski, Rummenigge, whoever you want.
Erling Haaland.
Anyone. Never, ever, ever. I mean, two tap-ins, really easy. Like you and I would have scored, but he's in the right place always. Great for him. If you haven't watched the game, and maybe you just look at the stats, and you see that Bayern only had 37% of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Is this 2024 Bayern? Is this what Tuchel is doing? Is
he turning Tuchel into late Chelsea?
More team in transition than in possession. Maybe he thinks that he doesn't have... I mean, they didn't have Goretzka and Kimmich, so the midfield of Pavlovic. And Guerrero. Yeah, okay. But you know what I mean. Like, maybe that was the reason. And maybe this Stuttgart team, who is a good team, we've said that before, we've seen them being very good in the past, including against Bayer Leverkusen last weekend, where they were outstanding. Maybe this is a team that you invite, give them the ball, and then hit them on the counter. When you've got Kane, Sané in that kind of form, even Müller, to be fair, did run a fair bit. So it was just so clinical from Bayern.
And this is Bayern at home, by the way.
Yeah, at home. Yeah, exactly. 37% of the ball at home.
That is a remarkable stat.
I'm not sure if the fans will always be happy with that, but hey, at least yesterday it worked. Gab, our thoughts go out to Luton Town captain Tom Lockyer, who collapsed 65 minutes into their game at Bournemouth at the weekend.
Yeah, it was pretty stunning. The score was 1-1. Both sets of fans immediately realizing how serious it was. Of course, maybe they also knew that this had happened before. Yep. This had happened in the Championship playoff final at Wembley. It's a cardiac arrest, and it's the second time in 6 months. And, you know, single most important is this man's health and his family, and I think that needs to be respected. I'm not a doctor. I am not an expert. I hope that doctors look at this, and if the family has questions about why their dad, husband, son is cleared and then goes on the pitch and it happens again, then I hope the doctors can answer those questions in a way that convinces them. Just for their own peace of mind. Most important thing is this young man's health. Simple as. But on the football front, Jules, the Premier League will replay this game, the entire game, rather than just the last 25 minutes. Does this make sense to you?
It's a good question, Gab. To be fair, I don't really have an... I don't have an opinion. We saw the Athletic Bilbao game the other day.
We saw Ajax replay 7 minutes.
Yeah. Athletic Club de Bilbao game the other day, where Granada, wasn't it? Where sadly a fan in the stand passed away. The game was stopped after 20 minutes and they only replayed the remaining 70 and at the time, and not the whole game. Maybe the Premier League has a different rule. I'm not really sure.
They do.
Sure.
They have a specific rule.
Have we seen this before or not?
I don't remember, but obviously they must have. What's interesting to me is the score was 1-1. What if the score had been 3-0? You know, obviously that's...
But you know what was more interesting? Well, I mean, the Championship final obviously continued once Lockyer fell to the ground. It was not abandoned like the game was abandoned on Saturday. So is the rule... Has the rule changed since? Do this...
Well, Championship final, I don't think is governed by Premier League rules, possibly.
Maybe.
Can I be very, very cynical about this as well? The Championship final is on a weekend at Wembley and there's no other... free weekends and show must go on. Maybe I'd hate to know that. I'd hate to think that. I also, wanting to be a little bit cynical, if you only replay the last 25 minutes, maybe some people aren't going to go, even though it's not that far from Luton to Bournemouth, right? If you replay 90 minutes, then they go. They might get a sandwich and concessions. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think this should not be a hard and fast rule because, like I said, if the score was 3-0, what's the law? It's not fair to replay the game, right?
Yeah. It's a very good debate, I think. This was way back on Friday night, but Juventus were held 1-1 at Genoa, which means they're now 4 points back behind the leaders, Gab. They were not happy with the officiating.
No, it's funny. It's almost like karmic because I thought Juventus actually played really, really well and could have won more. Leaving aside the officiating mistakes,
I was not sure.
I thought they created the chances they needed to create. They conceded very little. It's not the club that are complaining about the officiating. It's it's the fans, to the point that, like, you know, Malinovsky, who's Ukrainian, his wife is getting abuse and saying, like, I love Putin and stuff like that, which, you know, I'm pretty proud. But, you know, these are the sort of people who are on social media, right? These aren't the people in this isn't real life, right?
No, it's not.
I think mistakes happen. I think Genoa could have had some complaints about some incidents as well. So I would be happier with the performance. So you dropped 2 points. Big deal. You actually played reasonably well. You didn't think they played well.
I thought they were still very minimalist. Once they took the lead on that Chiesa penalty, after the equalizer by Gudmundsson, I think they had 0.4 XG. They didn't create. I looked at Cambiaso and Kostic's stats. Cambiaso touched the ball twice in the Genoa box. Kostic, none. None of their crosses found somebody in the... Like, I mean, I don't know. I'm still not there yet with Juve and Allegri.
Also back on Friday, a big win for Tottenham Hotspur away to Nottingham Forest. Jules, 1 point away from the top four. And Dejan Kulusevski and Fuego.
So good with his mask.
Oh, and how about Yves Bissouma getting sent off again?
Yeah, fourth red card for Spurs this season, like Liverpool. Second one for Bissouma after the one.
What is this guy's problem?
I don't know. So the rhetoric about are they too aggressive?
Off when your two goals up, you cannot get sent off.
No. I think he's late. He's obviously late. He misjudged the ball, and he catches Yates. There's no doubt. Okay. For the whole, are they too aggressive? What's the problem? So two of those four red cards obviously came in the same game at home to Chelsea,
right,
where Romero, had a brain freeze. Remember on that penalty on Enzo, and then Udogi, two yellows. The second one, especially when they were playing that stupid high line against 10 men. So, I don't think they're too aggressive. I think, yes, they play on the front foot for sure because they want that high line. They want to be very compact, everything. And for Bissouma, he's still a young player. I think he's going to learn from the dive at Luton that got that second yellow that got him sent off. And then from that challenge on Yates, that was really, one, unnecessary, and two, clearly just misjudged, mistimed.
And give some love for Kulusevski. Oh, we're seeing some next level stuff here.
Amazing. Although great assist by Matt Turner, of course, on the second goal. I mean, what on earth was that? But yeah, Kulusevski. Maybe it's the mask. Like for Osimhen, you know, maybe the mask just makes, like, gives you an extra dimension or something.
Wait, who's the best Arsenal goalkeeper? Turner, Raya, Ramsdale.
Oh, that's so mean. Milan rolled past Monza 3-0 as Simon Kier makes his return, Gab. I guess they bounce back from their Champions League disappointment.
I'm not sure it was that much of a disappointment because they knew it was going to be out of their hands, you know. And if you really, really wanted to be mean, you could say, oh, well, but had it not been for that Kylian Mbappe penalty in the 98th minute, if that doesn't get given, then they're through. And they're in the round of 16, right?
Got given. So now they're in the Europa League.
I know. Ifs and buts. They played well. They tried to back three. Nice to see Simon Kier back. Yeah. Obviously, they're shorthanded at the back. Giancarlo Simic, whose dad, Dario Simic.
Of course, of.
Very, very handsome Milan defender in the mid-90s from Croatia, obviously. Yeah. And we got to see Okafor score. We got Chukwueze.
A wild ball by Giroud for Okafor, though. So sweet.
Oh, it's all about
Giroud.
Such
a big
all
guy.
About.
No, but the ball for Pulisic against Newcastle was great. This one was even, the layoff was so, so good for my boy.
Like a fine wine.
Yeah.
Newcastle host Fulham. Shaw and Joe Linton have to go off, taking the injury list to about 99. But they still win 3-0, Jules. And I'm wondering, if their injured guys come back and Newcastle players stop breaking and they no longer have European football, they won't be as talented. Are we sleeping on them? Can they mount a threat?
Of course they can. But I think nobody is saying that they can't. I think we all know that. It's just
still Eddie Howe. And you really think they're a legit threat for the title?
Oh, not the title, for the top four.
Oh, yeah.
No, top four. Yeah, no, for top four. I don't think they are aiming for the title either. But for the top four, I love Luis Smiley and his goal. I think at 17, again, we talked a lot about Zaire Emery and with Simic. Other 17-year-olds, and I know they're impatient. And
by the way, with
time.
All the love in the world for Giancarlo Simic, let's not put him in the same category as Luis Miley and Warren Zaire.
No, but it's not.
Dude's played one game.
It's not about the category. It's about the age. And I think when you get to that age,
Lamine Yamal says hi. Sorry.
No, but there's plenty of others. I just thought about them because we talked about them. I think it's amazing, and for him, especially a local kid to score like that, must have feel really special for him and the whole Miley family and all the brothers who also play for the club and all of that in the youth team. So
I like
great there.
I like the fact that the guy looks like a child. He has a child's face, but then he has a big body. You saw him next to, I think it was Bruno Guimaraes.
Yeah, he's big. Oh, he's massive.
He's very
his voice is quite loud, too.
But the face.
I know. Gab, you had high hopes for Atletico Madrid. I mean, we both had. But then Atletico Club de Bilbao wiped the floor with them, like bad.
They really did. It's only 2-0, but both Williams boys hit the woodwork. Sunset missed a penalty. Yeah. Atletico Madrid, they tried to play
those games,
out.
Like the Valencia one, where they just don't turn up.
You know what it is? It's A, Griezmann had a bad day, yeah. So he's not there to save them. And secondly, the theory is that Cholo is trying to play out from the back. And, you know, because he wants to, this has to be Atletico 2.0. The problem is, away from home, people will come and press you high in a way that maybe they don't do at home. Because I think they've won every game at home this season.
Yeah, it's so...
And
physical.
These guys at the back, they're just not really made to play out from the back. And I think this is something he needs to look at. But I think the path is this. I don't want Atleti to go back to being
the
overplayed.
No, I see what you mean.
Borussia Dortmund may have topped their Champions League group, but they keep dropping points in the league. It's 1-1 at Augsburg, and they're now 5 points away from top four.
Yeah, Gab, it's just that they're so unpredictable, aren't they? We've said that before. They are capable, I think. At times, collectively, there's some really good, interesting things. And then others, they just... You look at them and you think that they can't be serious. The Schlotterbeck mistake on the goal...
And the guy just runs him over?
But just you think, like, at that level, Schlotterbeck is a good player. When he was at Freiburg, he was one of the best centre-backs in the league. Then he get his big move to Dortmund. All of that, you think, how can you make mistakes like that? And again, Füllkrug... The assist is absolutely stunning, and he could have had an even more stunning goal in the end, just to be denied by the goalkeeper. But it's just not good enough, and I just don't know if Terzic is the problem. I don't think so. Is it the players individually who are not at the right level in terms of being demanding with themselves, with their own performances? But there's clearly something just not right.
I hate to say it, but I'm starting to think Terzic is the issue, because if so many players let you down in individual errors, you obviously don't have them performing at their best. And, you know, he switched it around this time, played just Emerson on his own in midfield, tried to do the 4-1-4-1 or whatever you want to call it. But again, you have those same issues. And also, Füllkrug is unique. I mean, I don't know how many other players around are like that. So now you need to, and I know this isn't Terzic's fault, but he must have signed off on the signing. If you get Füllkrug, you need to create a Füllkrug system around him, yes?
Yeah, but he got the assist. He almost scored that amazing goal at the end.
I don't know that the other player, I don't know that he's been able to do that yet, right?
Yeah, I think they're doing more and more. And I still feel that it's defensively more than anything else where they have an issue, really. Kvaratskhelia and Osimhen shine, and Napoli beat Cagliari 2-1. They're 1 point outside the top four now. Gab, are you ready to jump on the Walter Mazzarri's wagon, Ben wagon?
What, the master of disaster? No, I am not. Aww. I'm not, because look, they won this game because Kvaratskhelia and especially Osimhen. And go and check out his assist for Kvaratskhelia's goal, because that was just a moment,
a moment
of sublime skill. He's not just strong and fast and smart. He also has a ton of technical ability as well. These are individual moments. Now, they did enough to beat Cagliari. Cagliari are not good. You know what you're going to get. But it still feels like it's more defend and then let the individual shine rather than the collective highs that they were at last season. Not every manager named Alonso is doing well, Jules. Diego Alonso is out after Sevilla's 3-0 home defeat to Getafe and Javier Bordalas. And Quique Sánchez Flores is apparently on his way in.
He's on his way in. I mean, for Diego Alonso, we said, didn't we, when he was appointed, what a gamble he was. The guy had never obviously coached in Europe before. His stint with Uruguay wasn't good. So we kind of saw it coming. 8 games in the league, no win. He won 2 Copa del Rey. Run against lower side in the Champions League, obviously, was not good. One of the worst, has to be one of the worst managers in Liga history, really.
Cohen, like, why don't we just burn him at the stake now? Yes, it's not a good record.
8 games, 0 win. This has to be the worst, really. And
he's the poor man.
I know, and he got injuries. I don't think it was just on him, but But they had to do something. They came in that Getafe. They gave away two penalties. They were dreadful.
What do you make of Kike coming in? Because
it's a stopgap, right? It's just until the end of the season, just to make sure they stay up. All they care about now is staying up. And Almeria are down already. They would be down. I mean, they're terrible. They would be okay.
I just wonder, because I always wonder, Kike Sanchez Flores is a guy who, he's an educated person. Yeah. People don't know.
Big football family, of course.
His aunt was also famous, was she a flamenco singer?
Yeah,
Lola
singer
Flores,
and dancer, yeah.
He strikes me a guy who's like, all right, I was a great footballer. I coached. I had some success at coaching, yeah. And then the success kind of stopped in the sense that I didn't continue my vertical rise. I've got other interests in life. Yeah. I just wonder, like...
He's got plenty of money. Yeah, no, I see what you
how
mean.
How motivated is he? Or is he just say, like, all right, I'm going to do this challenge till the summer, and then I'm out of here. I'm going to go back and surround myself with my books and my flamenco and whatever else it is that I did.
Maybe.
Just wondering.
Yeah. Bologna and my boy Thiago Motta are flying up. They beat Roma 2-0 and moving to the Champions League places now without Dybala and Lukaku. Roma aren't quite the same, are they?
No, you'd almost think that if you put all the eggs in the baskets of two players, one of whom obviously had a nightmare summer, the other one gets injured all the time, and then they're not there, and you haven't been able to give your team a rational way of playing, well, then you're going to struggle. But look, I don't want to take anything away from Bologna, because Bologna are really, really good.
Luis Ferguson, captain.
How about that, right? There's so many individuals and the job that Thiago Motta is doing, and they believe in each other, no names, smart scouting. I mean, no names, they say. We talked about Xerxes before.
Yeah.
I mean, there seems to be no limit to this man.
Yeah.
So very well done for them. For Roma, this isn't good. If Atalanta win and they kick off in a few hours, Roma are going to be down to 7th in the table.
Mm. And it's really tight, though.
It is extremely tight, but what I'm saying is that can work for you or it can work against you. So, obviously, he still has the Europa League. He came out, actually, because there's the age-old issue of his contract. I think this was the most definitive sign yet, where he said, oh, look, about going forward, he says, if I'm not here next season, it won't be because I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, you know, putting everything in the freaking court. Jules, speaking of Mourinho, he made headlines again. He sent on former Paris Saint-Germain star. Sorry, I'm being mean. Bayern star, former Swansea star. Renato Sanchez at halftime. And then he took him off after 18 minutes. He apologized to Renato Sanchez after the game for saying, because he said, look, I know it's humiliating, but I had no choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the poor kid, you see his face when he sees his number going up, and you're like, what, really? Did you not make a mistake there? Mourinho said that 3 or 4 times before in his career he had to do it. Others did it. I remember Jardim doing it with Martial at Monaco after 20 minutes. He came on at halftime where Roma were 1-0 down. Very early in the second half, they go 2-0 down. And then Mourinho says that he wanted the more attacking players in Eduardo Bove than Renato Sanchez. So it was really the only one. Was he really the only one you could have taken off? I'm not so sure.
Or do you want to give
maybe
people...
the easiest one to take off?
Or maybe you want to do something insane so that then you can give people more stuff. People will be talking about this and not talking about Roma's performance.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well.
But
maybe
I'll tell you what, with Renato Sanchez...
It's
like,
not a good look, though.
Like... 227 minutes to play this season, something like that. I mean, I don't understand. At some point, do people not see Renato Sanchez? The guy who looks after Renato Sanchez, his agent, is also the same guy who looks after Jose Mourinho.
That's the same guy who looks
after Sergio Oliveira and like the other waste of space that they signed last season. I mean, this is what would really, really annoy me. That you accept, Renato Sanchez, I don't even know where was he last season?
PSG.
Oh, yeah, but having a tremendous season at Paris Saint-Germain, right?
Yeah.
Oh, look, he needs a new home because he's never going to play for Paris Saint-Germain. Oh, Jose, you take him at Roma. Like, Roma should not be a rehab camp for Paris
PSG
Saint-Germain rejects.
Luis Campos took him for the same reason.
But that's what I mean.
Roma,
it's all the same people.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So, what? Can nobody see through this?
I know. There were more protests in the Bundesliga, Gab, and there likely would be more after the top two tiers voted to sell 8% of their TV and marketing rights for up to 20 years to a private equity group or few groups, Gab. What does this mean? And can you explain it a bit more? Because maybe my question was a bit all over the place.
Yeah, so basically, these are the I guess it's the professional Bundesliga, which is, so it's the top flight and the second flight, yeah. 36 teams in total. They needed a two-thirds vote, and this, after being rejected before, it just passed, 24 of 36 voting in favor, basically authorizing the league to sell 8% of their television and marketing rights. So they're mostly really their TV income.
TV, yeah, so La Liga and Liga both have done something similar.
Exactly. For a period of up to 20 years in exchange, obviously, for cash. So the idea is somebody comes along and says, like, all right, here, Bundesliga 1 und 2, you can have a billion, and then I'll take 8% for the next 20 years. It's a model that you use when you want cash injection straight away. Yeah. They're apparently going to use some of it to go and expand the Bundesliga's marketing internationally. A lot of times you might use this to refurbish stadiums. I don't think the Bundesliga really need that.
Nope.
Obviously, the Bundesliga cut from a different cloth than other leagues. There's still a lot of fan base. A lot of fan bases who say, like, look, we don't want to just be a commercial entity. And so they're very much against it. But I guess clubs feel like they could use the cash.
Yeah.
So when it actually happens, we're going to have to look at the terms of the deal, how much of it can be spent on players, how much of it on infrastructure and stuff that's going to help the league grow. But
and
there's
how
a
you
lot
share
of
the money as well. Like, do the bigger clubs get more money than the smaller clubs? You share equal with everyone. In Spain, not everybody obviously signed for it. In France, the biggest club get more money, so it's...
Biggest clubs or biggest club?
Biggest club, but the biggest one gets the most money, yeah, but yeah, no, it's not easy, I think.
Stonewise does it again! Leon went away to Monaco 1-0 with a late Jeffinho goal. Jules, has John Texter found the answer he was looking for? They're almost out of the relegation zone.
They are, Gab, I think. I think they're
in the playoff spot, I think.
Yes, exactly. In third from bottom now with that win. Back-to-back wins, by the way. Although this one is a smash and grab.
Proper. Oh, you think so? Well, I think it was their only shot on target, yeah?
Yeah. And he came in the 87th minute or 85th minute. Ashley Maitland-Niles. Arsenal fans remember him, of course, who is not, if you had forgotten, at Lyon. Not that he played that great until then, but great 1-2 with Kadewere. The substitution from Stonewise or Pierre Sage, the interim coach at Lyon, worked perfect. And they got that win. I still don't know how, really. But they got it. So well done to them. One more game before the winter break. And then see where they are. And I think, you know what? They might give him the job, Stonewise, until the end of the season.
I'm assuming he's cheaper than whatever other moats.
Yeah, exactly.
Texter is going to bring
and
in.
And
right?
For all the misery that John Texter has had since taking over the club, obviously, at least that one night on Friday would have brought a bit of happiness and joy before Christmas, you know? Rebecca Welch will become the first woman ever to referee a Premier League game when she takes charge of Fulham against Burnley later this month. Gav, this is a big deal, right?
I mean, it is, in the sense that obviously we've already had women referees in Germany and Italy and France.
Yeah.
So somebody's coming through. I think it's going to be a big deal when we don't point out that Rebecca Welch is a woman, because it'll be normal and we'll just have the best possible referees out there. Is this a first? Sure. But hopefully this will be normalized. Yeah,
exactly.
I don't particularly care. I just want good referees. And given the way officiating's gone in the Premier League the last 2 years...
I think we need Rebecca.
They need Rebecca if she's good. If Rebecca will just
good,
be...
Otherwise, she would not be there.
Well, oh, no, that's such a stupid thing to say, Jules. You can't say she's good, otherwise she wouldn't be there, because there's a lot of bad referees we've seen in the Premier League the last 2 or 3 years. We didn't say, oh, they have to be good, otherwise they wouldn't be there.
But you would expect that if she's chosen to referee a Premier League match, it's because they think she's good enough.
I would have expected the same of John Moss and the other guy with a round head.
No, I know.
And whatever, and all these other people, too.
But maybe even more.
But that's not the case. I don't know. I'm glad that this is not an issue. I'm glad they've expanded the pool, and hopefully more people will be given a chance. Hopefully she will be good enough. Hopefully, I would hope that we're all mature enough not to make a big deal out of her gender if she does make a mistake. But,
for sure,
you know, the issue is broader. The more inclusive you can be, the more people you can have, the more chance you will have some good referees. Like I said, Howard Webb, and I am Team Webb on this. I know that there have been so many mistakes this season. He's working on it, and this is part of it. Jules, I'm going to keep this going as long as he keeps winning. And believe me, it's not easy. What? Well, we destroyed him for somebody else. No. Oh, we did. Peter Bosz's PSV Eindhoven They have now make it 16 wins out of 16 in the Eredivisie. In fact, if you count the Champions League, there's only one team that beat them. That was Arsenal.
Yeah.
It was 4-0.
Yeah.
But that's the only game they've lost all season.
Yeah, yeah.
They've won every game in the league.
Every game. They're scoring for fun. They're great. They're great. But we never said that. We just said that at times. He was a big kamikaze, which he still is now. I mean, the 4-0 defeat against Arsenal was in the opening, the first game of the group stage of the Champions League. So maybe they were just a bit too naive, a little bit, maybe too excited. Hey, it's the Champions League, Arsenal. Well, let's do what we usually do. But no, it didn't work.
Sorry, but he's doing it with all our favorites. Bad De Jong, bad Serginho Dest.
Bad Serginho Dest.
I mean, other than okay, Bakayoko's obviously a player. No, but Bakayoko. Other than that,
yeah,
who gets you excited in this PSV team?
No.
I'm saying he's not loaded with talent. Is that fair enough? He's getting the best. Feyenoord are a more talented team than this one. And yet this is a better team. They're like 10 points clear. Would you agree?
Is good. No, they've got Saibari is good. No, they've got really good players. They have really good players.
Better than Feyenoord?
Ricardo Pepi is doing great.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay, Ricardo Pepi. There you
no,
go.
No, I'm just saying he's doing well. But that's where you're right is that I think Peter Bosz is getting the best out of those players.
Exactly.
For sure. Like Arne Slot got the best out of his Feyenoord guys for the last 3 years, despite all the departures and all the arrivals. So I'm all for it. I'm just not sure how much it tells you about the Eredivisie, though, and the level in that league. That's what I'm saying.
All right. They finished second in Arsenal's group. No, they finished ahead of Lens and friend, did, Joseph, yeah. and perpetual Europa League winner Sevilla. So,
yeah,
you know.
FIFA confirmed this weekend the procedure for European teams to qualify for the new expanded Club World Cup, Gab, to be played in the summer 2025, so between June 13th and July 15th or something like that, 2025, in the US. Does it make sense to you? And do you like this new Club World Cup that was clearly, I assume, was approved by votes from every FIFA country? There was a vote, there was a big discussion, there was a bit...
It was voted on by the FIFA Council.
Okay.
So no, maybe it wasn't even the FIFA Council, maybe even the FIFA Bureau, which is just the heads of the confederations.
Two dudes, yeah. Okay.
Like there's 12 European teams. The debate here was about how do we decide who qualifies. They've laid down the ground line. You can't have more than two per country,
yeah,
unless you have three because somebody from that country has won the Champions League in the 4-year period, right?
Yeah.
So Chelsea, Real Madrid, and Manchester City are the last three Champions League winners. If Arsenal win the Champions League this year,
yeah,
then they will become, then the Premier League will have three teams. Otherwise, it'll be whoever wins the Champions League this year. Then they go by coefficient, and based on the coefficient, the highest ranked teams outside this are Bayern, and without obviously doubling up, without having, in other words, more English teams, Bayern, Paris Saint-Germain, Inter, Porto, Benfica. And then there's going to be the three next highest at the end of the season.
Yeah.
You have to have some sort of access list. You know, people say, oh, it's just about money. It's a lot about money. If it was purely about money, you wouldn't have these limits per country, and you would be chucking in Liverpool and Manchester United. Yeah, we agree on that, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we'll see how it shakes out. I hope that this money is accounted for. I hope that this money goes to good use. And as ever, when
I've got loads of questions, but we can wait until the summer 2025 for me to ask you. Because, for example, if he starts on June 14th, who's going to play on June 14th when the league finishes at the end of May? Well, players have, they don't have holidays, they have to come back.
I would assume that it depends on the Champions League final. I would assume the Champions League final, well, it's an odd number of years, so I presume.
But you see what I mean? Like, players still need a rest in the summer. They usually have the whole of June off, and then the beginning of July, they start their preseason for starting the league.
Yeah, no, look.
End of August.
Player associations have talked about this.
They will be more friendly than this Club World Cup, and club just going to treat them as those friendly that we see in the US?
No, they're not, because there's going to be a lot of money at stake in this.
Okay,
so they're going to take this seriously.
But the players are never going to be ready between 14th of June and July 15th. Impossible.
Well, I think what they're going to say is that, okay, yeah, so you have 3 weeks or 2 weeks, whatever it is. You take a week off, and then you come back, and you start training again. This is not like a World Cup where you're bringing in 23 guys from 15 different teams. It's the same team, right?
What do you do then between July 15th, where mm-hmm. you play more friendlies, when you finish the tournament? This is just, I think...
No,
I
you
think
don't. This is the same.
Up your whole planning and programming if you're a club.
Jos, this is the thing, right? I mean, like, when we cut through the BS, right? All these summer friendlies and summer tours that the clubs love to go on because it makes them money, this is effectively going to replace them.
Yeah, but never that. So early. My point is not so much that. It's that how early it is. 14th of June to July 15th doesn't cut it. Because usually those friendlies that we mentioned in the US, in South Asia, anywhere, it's are in later preseason. In July.
Okay, but I think what you need to get around is when are the players going to take their holidays? Players are going to take their holidays after this tournament. They're not going to take their holidays before the tournament. If they made this a preseason tournament, people would treat it the way they treat those preseason tours in the US and Asia as a big joke, right?
I'm not sure that works.
So the way to think about this, after that. Sorry?
I'm not sure it works. So July 15th, the final is Chelsea against Manchester City. You see, and the league
was really that bullish on Chelsea.
No, but the league starts August, let's say 5th or whatever.
Maybe the league starts August 12th.
Okay, August 12th. So what? You give 2 weeks to the Chelsea and City players, 2 weeks of holidays after July 15th. They come back on August 1st, and then they've got another game. I think it's just mad.
Yeah, but it would be the same thing. If you had a World Cup, how much time would they get off? This is the point that they're making, right? If you had a World Cup and you reach the final...
I guess you're right.
In normal World Cups, right, when we don't have
similar times.
It's a similar time frame. That's what they're saying. They're saying it's every 4 years, don't break balls. I think there is a legit player welfare discussion to be had around this.
FIFA, our friend Malango,
spoke about this, but... Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, right?
Yeah.
Clubs can't have it both ways. Players can't have it both ways.
That's true. Donny van de Beek.
No, this is my question, Jules. I'm the Donny van de Beek correspondent here. Donny van de Beek has reached an agreement to join Eintracht Frankfurt on loan until the end of the season.
I love him.
I'm not sure about you, but I'm happy for him.
I'm so happy for him. I mean, I can't even see him when I go to a United game because he's not even in the squad anymore.
He was on the bench.
Well, yeah.
At Anfield.
Because
I looked for him on my television.
Nobody else.
He was listed. I looked on my television trying to have my Donny van.
I couldn't see him either.
I couldn't see him. So I don't know if it's true or if they just felt bad for him or I don't know.
But I used to see him warming up a lot. That's what he used to do, warm up. He used to run on the touchline. He was very good at it. I can tell you that. One of the best subs warm up I've ever seen in my life. But he would never play, and he was such a good player. I don't know. It was a nightmare move for him. I don't understand why he hasn't moved away from there earlier.
When he was a really good player, because back then when Ajax had that tremendous run, remember it was him and Frankie de Jong in midfield. Yeah. I was team Van de Beek. I thought, I think Van de Beek is better than Frankie de Jong. Shows you what I know, right? Maybe back then he had a manager who really knew him and really understood him and could get the best out of him.
Yeah.
Whereas now he has the same guy. No. I hope it's not injuries. I hope he gets a fresh start.
I know, me too. Liverpool said that they are working with police to identify and ban a person who threw a bottle that hit the Manchester United bus on Sunday as he was making his way to Anfield to play the game against Liverpool. What do you make of it?
So... it's good that Liverpool, once this guy gets identified, they ban him for life. Well done, Liverpool, you're taking ownership. But isn't this is a law enforcement issue. So after we finish here, we're taping this in Hammersmith in West London, right?
Yeah.
If I go downstairs to the liquor store and I get a bottle of Jack Daniels, right? And I throw it against a bus as it's going by. What do you think is going to happen to me? Do you think I might get criminally prosecuted by the 10 bazillion cameras that would film me and identify me because I live in a police state?
But don't they have to report the guy maybe to the police first and then the police do their job?
Why do Liverpool need... No, how about no? Look, the Manchester bus has a police escort, right?
Yeah.
There's people all around. There's CCTV all around. Look, Liverpool Football Club are doing everything they can. But this is a police issue. This person... who throws a bottle, and by the way, we saw just this season with Fabio Grosso, what can happen when you start throwing things at buses. I mean, I'm not saying this person definitely will go to jail, should go to jail. I would send him to jail, at least for a little while. I would plaster his name everywhere so his employer knows about him and he's shamed. Maybe they will, maybe they won't, maybe I'm too harsh. But yeah, Liverpool can do their part, but let's not put the blame and the responsibility on Liverpool. Let's remember, this is a law enforcement issue.
I know.
Manchester United have a right to expect to be able to ride in a bus to their workplace safely.
Yeah,
and the police are there to guarantee their safety.
Yeah.
My old friend Michael Imanalo, who is now the sporting director of the Saudi Pro League, says that if Kylian Mbappe wants to come, there will be a team that makes space for him. That's generous, right?
So kind of him. Is it because it's Christmas, so he feels like very generous? And because Kylian was really worried. Kylian was really worried that nobody in Saudi Arabia would welcome him. He was like...
Especially now that Robbie Fowler's been sacked from his second division side, because Robbie would have probably taken him.
He was like, what have I done to Al Ittifaq, to Al Nasser, to Al Ittihad, to those clubs? Like, would really nobody... Don't worry, Kylian, if you really want to go to Saudi Arabia, somebody, we will find somewhere with a bit of money... Someone with a bit of money somewhere to welcome you.
Wait, because he needs money too? Well, he's not just going for the experience?
We'll find you somewhere in Jeddah, like a lovely little house with a bit of garden and maybe a swimming pool if you're lucky. You know, it's really kind. It's really kind. But Kylian Mbappé is not going to go to Saudi Arabia. Certainly not now, Michael. So sorry about that. The Club World Cup kicks off, semi-finals kicks off in a few hours, Gab. Fluminense against Al Ahly today. In the first semi-final, and then Manchester City against Urawa Reds Diamonds from Japan tomorrow. Are we sure this is going to be a Fluminense City, South America, Europe final?
It's not something that's been a given in recent years, by the way. No. So obviously on paper, then City should be Urawa Reds tomorrow. Although I don't know if their league form is going to extend and they're going to make life difficult
and
for themselves.
And they have travel and everything.
Yeah, whereas, of course, Urawa Reds, Japan to...
They've been there 10 days.
Yes, have been there longer. Yes, true. Fluminense, actually, I will watch this game today because, obviously, Fluminense is doing so well with the Copa Libertadores.
Yeah.
But also, you know who plays for Al Ahly? I had no idea. He just joined. Anthony Modeste.
He did. He got sent off in the quarterfinal, so he can watch this from the stands.
But he'll be back for the final, right? Is he Paris-born and bred?
That's a good question. I think he might be.
But he doesn't know. They're all Paris-born.
You know the celebrations. What's the celebration?
Well, whatever. I thought it was kind of cool. There's not many European players who sign on to play for African clubs. Yeah. Simple as. Jules, this brings us to an end.
Yeah.
But we got to come back on Thursday.
Some
massive
games.
We got midweek football in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
We have the League Cup. Yeah. We might even get to see Christopher Nkunku play and not just warm up.
La Liga as well. So.
And La Liga too. Loads how about that? Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.